This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Top of the hour, it is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. There's our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Lots to get to here, Jensen. Very busy hour. Mike Palm's going to join us. Of course, the maestro himself right there from Circa in Las Vegas. Get what's on his mind today. Chris Vasili is going to join us in the very next hour. Get his thoughts on the World Cup. We know who's going to be playing in the final. And Jensen, that's where we begin. Hour number two, our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
It really is incredible, certainly from me, from a novice perspective of not necessarily paying as much attention to Argentina until this World Cup. And Jensen, if this is the way they get it done, they are a heart attack waiting to happen. But boy, they just pull it out time and time again throughout this World Cup, and they do it and they shock in England 2-1 with two tallies late. Jensen, is this all about Messi or just that kind of heart of a champion that we're talking about with Argentina?
Yeah, heart of a champion indeed. And when you have the greatest to do it, you're always in it. We say it in most of our North American sports, right? If you have the best player on the field, you're in everything until the final whistle blows. And that certainly was the case for Argentina. And not only the assist for the equalizer, but a cross that will long live in Argentine lore that has set up the header for the ultimate winner. And I tell you, it just feels like this has been their calling card. The three goals in the final 15 minutes plus stoppage time against the Pharaohs of Egypt, one of the greatest comebacks in World Cup history. And then I think we need a shout out to Cape Verde. They're the only team that has played Spain and Argentina rough and tumble. Maybe we should have given them already automatic entry into the 2030 World Cup. Apparently they can hang with the superpowers, but we have our final ready to go for Sunday afternoon.
And I know if you're a supporter of the three lines today, it's a tough one. We all understand that. But if you're Thomas Tuchel and you are the manager, you know that people are going to be looking at you as the guy leading this squad saying, how could you let that happen? Well, he did respond to exactly how this game ended yesterday. All right, we're going to get to Thomas.
Of course, there will be criticism, and that is part of being the England manager. I accept the responsibility. We will analyze this performance honestly, learn from our mistakes, and make sure this experience helps us grow stronger. We have a responsibility to finish this tournament in the best possible way. And that starts with preparing for the third place match.
Okay, I'll give him this, though. Like, I like the take responsibility part. I don't know about the third place match part. Like, this nation is mourning today, Jensen, right? Like, I don't know that they're ready to turn the page to France just yet.
Well, it sounds like the Federation there in England has already endorsed him to continue as team manager moving forward. So whatever you want to do, I mean, all that's left is, can we really handicap motivation? Because that's going to be the most difficult thing to figure out, what either France or England are motivated to do in a quote unquote meaningless match on Sunday.
Well, you knew the criticism would come. Jamie O'Hara, of course, is a former English player and now TalkSport radio host. He might have a different outlook than the manager did.
You're playing against Argentina. Yeah. You can't sit off for 25 minutes against Argentina. No. He absolutely bottled it. Thomas Tuchel's cost us the World Cup. He cost us the World Cup. We're 1-0 up. Played well first half. All right, cagey affair. We go 1-0 up. Be brave. Mm. Be brave, Thomas. This is what we brought you in for. We brought you in for this moment. We got rid of Southgate because he bottled it, because he weren't brave. We brought you in for now to make that decision. We're 1-0 up in a World Cup semi-final. Bring on Rashford. Bring on Saka. And if they score, they score. But at least we're going to go down fighting. At least we're going to go down with some pride. We fell out of the World Cup in disgrace because of him. Because of him. And we brought him in for this job. This is what we brought him in for, to get us over this line. And it's the same old England, same old crap. Same old guff that I have to watch every tournament that we're in. And it's the manager's tucked us up again. Tucked us up. We're dead on our feet. Got Morgan Rogers playing right wing. Jude Bellingham on the left. Brings on Nico Riley. We can't get out. Harry Kane's done nothing. He's dead. Nothing. Got nothing left.
I don't.
I can't believe it, Jace. Well, no. Jace, I can't believe it. No, it's a disgrace.
I
he should be sacked. Get him out. Gone.
Okay.
Get that man. Get Jamie O'Hare. Jamie from Manchester needs to call in to the fan in New York after the Giants start 0-2.
Oh, my goodness.
Or in Philadelphia when Jalen Hurts fumbles on the goal line. Oh, man, we need that energy in NFL season. That was epic. Well done.
You know what? And I got to say, you know me as a bettor, right? Like, and as a fan of certain teams, whether money's on the line or not. He used to play for England, so you can understand that passion. But that's all we ask for is get in the fight, man, right? And when you're in the fight, stay in the fight. Don't be passive about that. I get where he's coming from, the mentality. Hey, they beat you, but we're still trying to score. We're not just trying to run off the clock here, and we get beat by Messi. That's one thing. But to lose in the manner in which you lost, that's the other. That's the tough part to take. So I get the criticism. I think it's fair. Now, whether or not he's going to be sacked, we know that that does not look like that's going to be the case. He's going to be back. And by the way, you had a great usage of sacked earlier in the show. That did not fly below my radar. I loved it. But, you know, you can understand the passion from the Brits today.
I just saw this because this is how we know that our computers and our devices are listening to us. BetMGM had a great post yesterday. The England national team, big name and big market, peaked in the 1900s, always in the mix, hasn't advanced past the semifinals since the 60s. And Dave, I'm glad you're sitting down. It's Harry Kane looking distraught up at a scoreboard right next to Dak Prescott looking at a score. It is, and the handshake emoji between England and the Dallas Cowboys. Oh my God, BetMGM throwing some massive shade at your boys, Dave Ross. Oh my God.
I find that completely unnecessary. Completely, utterly unnecessary. When my friends send me stuff like that, I said, why'd you do that? What was the point of that? Why'd you do that, BetMGM? You did that for me. You did that to me. You tried to hurt my feelings today, and you succeeded. We've got four at the top right now, Jensen Lewis, at the Open Championship. The last major of the year is well underway here. Scottie Scheffler's on his back nine right now. He is the betting favorite here. He was to begin the day, but it's been cut way down because he's three under par, one off the lead, and he's now down to a $3 betting favorite here. Rory McIlroy, who's not gotten off on the golf course yet, is almost 10-1 plus 970 is what I'm seeing with Scottie getting shorted. Four players, Jensen, right now are already at four under par. Two of those guys in the house, Sungjae Im, Dan Brown. No disrespect to those guys. Don't necessarily expect them to stick around for all 4 days. Alex Smalley's had a really good year in the PGA Tour. He's also at four under par. And Ryan Gerard, early on, is making his move here at four under par. So maybe some names we didn't think would be at the top if you're looking at first-round leader. But I do think, like we talked about here, and this is why I got up super early today to watch this golf,
yeah,
it feels like the golf course is gettable right now, Jensen. I think those afternoon wave guys, I think you added a ticket on Colin Morikawa and maybe Rory McIlroy. I can understand why you'd add some of those plays right now for first-round leader.
Yeah, certainly. So I did this morning. It's still plenty of time to get in. They don't tee off until late into the 9 a.m. Eastern hour. We also had, Rory at 24-1 for me, Colin Morikawa 51-1 for first-round leader. So hopefully those are in the fight. A couple other notes for you. If you followed our Bet the Builds, both DraftKings and FanDuel, Alex Smalley was in both of them. Scottie Scheffler was in both of them. Tyrrell Hatton was in there. We have got some rabbits out there. That is great news to start. Russell Henley was also part of one of those. So we're okay in that. And I'm anxious to see, this will be the afternoon wave, if you will, across the pond, but the late morning rounds here. We'll have a watchful eye also on Patrick Reed, a guy that I know you and I both high on. You've got him for top American. So work cut out for Patty the Batty on the golf side. We shall see what the villain does here later on this afternoon.
And Tommy Fleetwood, by the way, the sentimental choice. And Justin Rose, not the best days for the Englishman so far. Rosie, 3 over par. And Tommy Fleetwood right now, even par midway through his first round. We're back in action in Major League Baseball today, Jensen. Can't wait to see. Look, I should say I'm optimistic. I don't know if it can go much worse for the Mets in the second half, I think is what I'm getting at, Jensen. 17 games under 500. They're going to take on the Phillies today in the city of brotherly shove. Look, I don't have visions of grandeur for this team, but you've mentioned it. You know, to get on the good foot to the second half, you'd like to get that started with a win today.
Right now, what, 85% of bets, 74% of money on the Phillies, minus $1.26. Aaron Nola, Christian Scott, that is the pitching matchup today. I'm going to wait to see where lineups come out because we are just a day after that one lone off day every team gets for after the All-Star game. And this is always the one you didn't want to be part of because you wanted the extra 24 hours to reset and get a little extra rest. So I wonder where both managers go from a starting lineup standpoint. I would think Donnie Baseball for Philadelphia is pretty much all of the regulars because the All-Star game was in Philly, so probably not a lot of those guys went too far. Anxious to see where, you know, the Mets lineup is. And again, you got guys auditioning for the trade deadline. So big game to start here, and we'll wait to see what lineups are before we make any plays officially in this one.
You know, that BetMGM tweet really disturbed me, Jensen. I'm wondering, do you think they had it ready regardless of the result? Had Argentina lost, would it have been messy?
Yeah, it was yesterday, so clearly they had the drafts ready to go.
Oh, they're always taking shots at America's team here, Jensen. They're always taking those shots. Let's come back. Let's talk some Major League Baseball here in that second half and some projections you had at the beginning of the year and how they look now. That's next right here. Beason by the Books. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
Winner Circle Proxy and VSiN are giving away two incredible prize packages, and you can get those. We'll talk about those because, again, those are for Circa Survivor, Circa Millions, $1,000 a piece for those entries. And, again, you want to get in Grandissimo, it is $100,000. But right now, we've also got a great deal here at VSiN, $175. That's going to cover you all the way through the Super Bowl right now when you go to VSiN.com/subscribe. So that NFL betting guide, which is out right now, well, we're going to solve those burning questions you have for every team in the NFL, all 32. Early best bets on props and futures predictions for the entirety of the 2026 season, including playoff teams. Go to it right now, VSiN.com/subscribe. $175 will cover you all the way through the Super Bowl and get in on those great Circa offers as well right now. But Jensen, we want to talk a little bit more Major League Baseball because you had some pretty bold takes, and I think some of those have really come to fruition here so far in the National League West. What'd you make of Corbin Carroll? This is a guy I know that he's got, dare we say, all-star potential every year when healthy. What do you make of his start here in the first half of the Arizona Diamondbacks season?
Yeah, so let's kind of overview it because, again, most of the divisions we looked through so far and looking back on the bold takes, we have been over 500 at least halfway through the year on my crystal ball. So I feel confident there. Corbin Carroll, remember the hamate injury, so that always can sack the power a bit. So he's a little behind pace with that. My bold take was Corbin Carroll would hit 35 or more homers, steal 45 or more bases, finish top three in NL MVP voting. 13 homers, 10 stolen bases at the break, currently 80-1. To win the National League MVP. Not going well. What is going well? Oh, my. Hunter Goodman hits 35 or more homers and ascends to a top five catcher in Major League Baseball. Dave, not only are we going to hit that, barring injury, He has got 27 home runs thus far. And if you look at catching right now in the league, only Shea Langeliers and Dylan Dingler have a higher offensive wins above replacement than Hunter Goodman. Hunter Goodman is at 2.1. Langeliers, who is your starting catcher for the American League, is at 2.2. So just splitting hairs right now as to who could be the number two catcher overall in big league baseball. So we are all about dead on with that prediction there. Dodgers, our technical director, Larry Meir, going to be very excited, although not surprised. My prediction was the Dodgers make history as the first National League team to win three consecutive World Series titles. Dave, they are currently the shortest shot on the board, plus $1.90 to win the Fall Classic. For what it's worth, and you know I love to look at the way too early odds, when they won the World Series the day after, they were plus 350 November 1st of 2025. So not too much has changed in that department. We really were not too high on the San Diego Padres, Dave, in the VSiN MLB betting guide. My bold take for them was big-time injuries forced the Padres to sell huge assets at the deadline, and they missed the playoffs. Well, currently, they are at 3-1 to make the postseason. They are on the outside looking in, albeit it's not, you know, the worst of circumstances because, as we said, there's so much parity. 23 of the 30 major league teams entering the second half, Dave, are within four games of a wild card spot, and the Padres are at 500. They're 48-48. They're only 3.5 back. They'd have to overcome the Diamondbacks, Padres, Cardinals, and Marlins at this point. So that one is still kind of there. They've got ground to make up to be able to find their way into the postseason. Now, the one that's the biggest swing and miss, my goodness gracious. A lot of people on our network liked Logan Webb at probably north of 20-1 to win the Cy Young this year. I think we kind of knew that first start of the season where the Yankees torched him pretty good. Might have been an omen. And it might have been an omen for me being way more glass half full than probably a lot of people were on the Tony Vitello era for the Giants. My bold take was Logan Webb finishes top three in National League Cy Young voting, and the Giants win 87-89 games. Neither of those are going to come to fruition. Logan Webb currently 150-1 to win the Cy Young in the National League, and the Giants per Fangraphs are on pace to win 74 games, a far cry from the 87-89, I thought that they would have. Hey, again, we'll take 3 out of 5 anytime. That's Hall of Fame type stuff. Let's get her home here. A lot of those are looking pretty good so far.
If you're betting those angles, you're definitely in the black here when it comes to this, because that's pretty darn good when you're doing that sort of prognostication here. Before the season began, we do believe in full transparency here in a Lewis Ross administration. So I've got nothing but good things to say about your picks here in the NL West. Now, to the Dodgers' point about making history for that third consecutive World Series title in the National League, to be the first NL team to do that, are they going to add at the? It seems preposterous to say, but if there's ever a team that does not stand on their laurels or just sit pat and say, "All right, we're good enough as it is," I think we all think they're good enough as it is. But do you expect them to actually make a move and bolster what is a 61-win team here at the break?
Yeah, the scary part is they'll be in on Mason Miller, closer for the Padres right now. Be in on Tarek Skubal. And again, it is what they do. And is their farm system and some of the big league players they have, they could package together something very attractive to not only San Diego, who is in desperate need of top-end prospects, at least after these last couple of years in which A.J. Preller pushed a lot of chips to the middle. Dodgers, again, you know, still their reinforcements, Dave, are just getting healthy. Remember, Will Smith has been out since June 5th with the neck inflammation. Yeah. You get him back, another big bat in their stalwart, who was excellent in the postseason last year. Blake Snell on the mend here from the elbow, the loose bodies that he is worked his way back from. You're hoping Tyler Glass now has got the lower back spasms behind him. And then remember your old boy, Edwin Diaz, who had the loose bodies, you know, is basically still not pitched so far this year. So they have everything they need by just getting healthy, but they will certainly be in on the trade market. No question about it.
Okay, counselor, if I may approach the bench on this one, because this is the one I want to whisper behind chambers, and I don't want the jury to hear this, okay? But is if the Dodgers do that, and they do go get more, and they add a Scooble, you name it, a Mason Miller, right? There's a reason why we're going to have this baseball Armageddon coming in the post in the after the season is done. And some will say that the Dodgers are, quote unquote, ruining baseball by going out there and spending. And that's why they need a salary cap. So we whisper this, counselor, behind chambers with the judge, because we don't want the general public to hear this. But that will be the argument, will it not?
There will be certain sections of fans across the country that would argue that. It is not as clear and succinct and powerful of an argument when you consider, Dave, for revenue share, there are plenty of teams that don't go for it and don't spend
right.
that are right there on the precipice of making the postseason. So I will show my Major League Baseball Players Association bias here. And if we were to get transparency from the owners about what revenue is, at least the percentage of revenue that is reinvested into on-field talent, well, I think there would be a majority of the fan base across Major League Baseball that would be pretty PO'd that their teams are in contention and their owners are not spending. And that is the nature right. of the beast. We know that. They know that. They've already started a propaganda campaign on MLB TV, trying to get these fans to say, oh, you know, this payroll disparity, oh, you know, spending as much as they do at the top. Sorry, Rob, and sorry, owners, you're not pulling the wool over these people. Go ahead and show what these teams in contention are spending on-field talent and reinvesting. We'll get a clear picture at the deadline what teams are willing to do, even without clear guardrails already for the CBA next year as far as a quote-unquote cap or a floor, what have you. But the Dodgers do exploit one of the rarities in their TV deal where they're able to keep an exponentially higher amount of money than other teams. That's why the Dodgers have had an advantage over the other teams. That's it, Dave. Not the other 29 teams who make plenty of money. I don't want to hear any owner crying foul, and they're all billionaires, Dave. Multi-billionaire owners who have plenty of money to spend, and they won't do it. A lot of them won't. So just remember that when your team's in contention at the deadline and they don't want to take on some of those other contracts that could get them across the line of the postseason.
And with that, Your Honor, the defense rests. That's a great closing argument. It really is. And that's why I've never been upset with the Dodgers. Working within the framework that is currently out there, they haven't done anything nefarious to get these advantages. They've worked a great TV deal, taken that TV money, and spent more than other owners are willing to spend. So I'm not mad at the Dodgers at all. I was upset that they beat the Blue Jays last year, so I couldn't cash that ticket. But overall, big picture, you have to respect the way the Dodgers have done that for their fan base to go out there and spend money to win. And that's why it's worked for LA. Other teams could follow that same framework if they so chose. I think that is a great closing argument, Counselor, that you just made on behalf of the Dodgers in revenue. When we come back, we're going to have the maestro. Mike Palm is going to join us here. I can't wait to find out what is on his mind. And by the way, we have a new leader at the British Open. We'll tell you who it is next, right here in Visa.
You're tuned in to Visa by the Books, right here on Visa.
The Circa Survivor documentary is back for another season, and this one is bigger than ever. We've got 7 all-new episodes kicking off every Wednesday, starting July 22nd at 9 p.m. Eastern. Now, episode 1 takes you inside the growth of the most electrifying contest in sports betting, now with $18.7 million on the line in the massive new Grandissimo format, raising the stakes even higher. Follow the sharp minds and bold personalities who think they've got what it takes to go the distance. Whether you play Circus Survivor yourself or just love the drama of a season-long grind, this is must-watch TV. Check it out every Wednesday starting next week at 9 p.m. Eastern, only on VSiN. That's a big part of that promotion is Mike Palm, VP of Operations at Circa the D and the Golden Gate Casino. And the maestro kind enough to join us live in studio back home at Circa in Las Vegas. Give him a follow on X at Circa Maestro here on the Progressive Guest Line. And Mike, I think you're one of the more underrated actors of our time. I don't know if we're ready to put you in with the Cruises and the De Niro's and that like. But when people watch this documentary, will you be making appearances here and there and to show off those acting chops?
Cruise, really? I will be involved.
Absolutely, Cruise.
Terrific. A Few Good Men. All right, I'll give you that. Now, I appear probably in every episode because they're here. You know, they start out when we do the contest announce, you know, back in May, and then they film throughout the course of the summer because they're casting this wide net, hoping to catch some of the folks that'll be in it at the end. And so then every week they're here and interviewing. And I'm talking about David Skolansky and James Farah and their company. And so, yeah, I mean, the hard part, they get hours and hours, hundreds of hours of footage, and then the editing, right? The editing to tell the story is obviously, you know, how the sausage is made. That's the key to all of it. So, yeah, I've seen a couple of the episodes, but I'm looking forward because I haven't seen beyond mid-October, basically, in the storytelling. So I believe it's 7 episodes in total. I could be wrong. It might be 6.
Mike, I do believe Christopher Nolan, great friend of the show, was consulted for the cutting room floor there. And I do believe you would be getting a call. Hey, if they can spend as much money trying to bring Matt Damon home alive the way they have throughout his acting career, I think they do get him home in the Odyssey. No reason why you can't be there and be a prominent guy. Speaking of prominence, I know we've asked you every week. I'll be out there towards the end of August to get into Circa Millions, excited to run a little solo jaunt alongside Dave and I on our conjunctive entry, if you will. Still ahead of pace, Survivor Millions. Where are we on contest signups?
Yeah, really, we're doing very well. We're in the millions, I believe, up around 34%, pacing ahead of last year. And in Survivor, I just looked at the number yesterday, 75% higher than last. That's significant. Like for the same July 14th last year, which was, you know, Tuesday's number, but July 14th, it goes by the same number of days left till the start of the season. So on that date, we had 2,000, a little over 2,000 entries. This year, 3,500 already at that point. So, you know, right at 75% over. Now, Mitch Moss said, well, if you extrapolate, but we're talking about a small percentage, right? A sixth or a seventh of the total pool right now, maybe even an eighth. But, I mean, if you extrapolate it, we're talking about 31 million. I'm not predicting that, but it's certainly good pacing.
Speaking of that pacing, Mike, now that we get through, we're going to get through the World Cup final. I'm sure it's going to be raucous there on Sunday when we get to Argentina and Spain. And now, you know, we've got the British Open, the last major of the year. We'll be done in golf. And Major League Baseball starting off their second half here. But for football, for our football here, American football, do you expect even more of those entries to start popping in as people start to really turn the page to the NFL?
Yeah, certainly. That will become the focus past Sunday here when the World Cup wraps up. And maybe for some it already was. Not everybody was all in on the World Cup, but now you really start looking and they report to camp and you start looking at futures and divisions and season win totals and alternate win totals and all that kind of fun stuff that we get involved with the NFL. It really ramps up basically the last week of July is when we start to see that progression of the entries. And then, as you know, the last 2 weeks are just crazy.
Yeah, they definitely will be. Speaking of crazy, Mike, I don't know if we will equal in 2030 when we head to Spain and Portugal and Uruguay for the next World Cup. But the comeback kids of Argentina just continue to defy imagination. A couple of questions on this front. Number one, I think you had said and remind us all, you guys are okay as far as the futures book for both Spain and Argentina. How do you handicap motivation in the third place match? I'm sure you'll take some handle on it, but very intriguing to see where both France and England might be there on Sunday night.
Really hard to handicap. It's tough. I don't know if I'll get involved there unless maybe I even take some props on anytime goal scorers. It's just, you know, people say now, why do you still play a third place game? Most people aren't old enough to remember when they played a third place game in the NCAA basketball tournament. right? But they play it, and a ton of people will come and watch it in Miami. They're expanding the halftime in New Jersey on Sunday to 25 minutes to have all these has-been artists come out and do the halftime show. I don't know. You couldn't have had Gloria Estefan in the sound machine. And then there's no halftime show in Miami. Third place game gets no halftime show. In terms of the future book, Jensen, Spain is a small winner for us. We're in a really good spot with Argentina here.
Wow.
We didn't take a lot of future actions. The only loser for us of the Final Four was England, and it's only because they took some money before the Norway match. We had a couple of bets on them when they were still 5-1. So in terms of the future book, we're in good shape. Either side, small winner to Spain, pretty significant winner to Argentina.
You know, Mike, I thought about it, but, you know, again, soccer is not necessarily my cup of tea of hopping in on Argentina live when they were down 1-0 just by the way that they've done pretty much every game so far here in this World Cup. They always just seem to come from behind. Are you seeing that? Are people hopping in live in these big matches here? Certainly, again, if Argentina fell behind 1-0 against Spain, I wonder if people would run into the window to trust Messi to pull back another comeback like they've been doing.
Dave, I give credit to our guys that have managed the soccer here. You know, we've had a pre-flop bet on every game. Will the team that trails win? Right? And
you know,
Paulie's tracking it. Because everybody says if you bet the tie every match, you're up X units. But Paul's tracking it if you bet it, because it's always somewhere in the range of 11-15-1 on these games. Mm. And it's happened quite frequently. And, you know, the stat of how many goals they've had after the 75th minute has been an all-time record. Not just because they had more teams this year. If you did it in instance per game, it's also the highest it's ever been in the World Cup. I think the great lesson, even for the casual fan here, is when you get the lead, you have to keep attacking. Look, I mean, England's got 55 minutes to defend or whatever, 50 minutes to defend, and they go into a shell. And then once Argentina scored, they couldn't ever turn it back on. They didn't even get any good opportunities once they fell down 2-1. In that 11 minutes of added time. But if you look in contrast at Spain against France, they got up 1-0. They scored in the second half. Lamal almost scored again. Remember, he's just barely offside. They kept attacking, and they kept the high possession up. They didn't go into the shell and said, oh, we're going to defend for 40 minutes.
Mike, as we get towards Sunday afternoon, just the game in and of itself, we anticipate this could be the final act for Lionel Messi, and what a storied career it's been. Spain still have only conceded one goal, and a historic run for them, only the second time they've made it to the final. A lean or an angle for you, what do you like, anything in the game, and do we actually end this World Cup final in regulation, or will we need extra time for the final to lift the trophy?
Perhaps. I look at the tie has had good value, and the few times I bet it, you really only have to hit it, two out of five times, and you're making money. It's hard not to take Spain just to win and lay the 150. I thought perhaps this number would get higher, especially once Argentina tied it in the 85th minute. I said, now these teams are going to play an extra 30 minutes, plus one less day rest. Spain got to play on Tuesday as compared to Wednesday, but it didn't get there. It ended in the 90 or the 102, however you want to say it. I don't know. A friend of mine texted me on Monday ahead of this France-Spain game and said, have you ever seen a team that's ranked number one that's so dismissed at the window? Right? I mean, this team hasn't lost in 38 matches, ranked number one coming in, defending European champions. They beat France twice in the last 2 years already before that match, so it wasn't getting over any France hump. But because of that 0-0 draw with Cape Verde, I think everybody thought, oh, this team is a fraud. They've been knocked out of previous World Cups where they drew 0-0 and got beaten penalties. They can't score enough. And they've just sort of forgotten. It's hard to bet against Argentina, but I think at 150, I have to lay it here with Spain.
Very quickly, Mike, do you get the feeling that at least American, maybe novice soccer fans are saying, I don't want to bet against the Michael Jordan of soccer? You can bet against Tom Brady. He didn't win every Super Bowl he ever was the quarterback in. But that if I bet against Argentina, I'm betting against Messi, and therefore I'm betting against the best player we've ever seen.
But we haven't seen that, though. They haven't gotten here with our book. I can't speak for the whole rest of the country, but our only bad result yesterday was England in 90. Like, they don't bet Argentina.
Wow. Interesting. Can't wait to find out what is on your mind. We will do that next with the Maestro when you come back with us right here. It is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN by the books, right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the books on this Thursday morning. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here with you whenever we have Mike Palm on this spot on every Thursday. America gets to figure out what is exactly on the maestro's mind. It is time right now for Palm's Pressing 3.
Pressing? Yes, I say it's pressing.
This is Palm's Pressing 3.
Now, my mother told me never to answer a question with a question.
Sir, my client has answered every question asked by this committee with the utmost sincerity.
Jensen, one thing I've always found fascinating is how few former major leaguers truly leave baseball. They move into broadcasting, coaching, fantasy camps, autograph signings, alumni events, almost anything that keeps them connected to a game that in reality has already moved on from them. Too many fans, it can appear as though baseball wasn't just what they did, but all they ever knew. So, Jensen, when a player's career ends and the identity, status, routine, and purpose that defined his life suddenly disappear, is that why we sometimes see former athletes struggle with depression, addiction, broken relationships, or simply finding a sense of purpose? Is the hardest part of retirement not leaving baseball, but realizing that baseball has truly left you? And now having to discover who you are without it and finding out the hard way that this new reality is too much for them to handle.
Yeah, it's a real thing. And fortunate for me, I'll just go off my own experience. I think I've told you and Dave, I'll remember it like it was out of a Christopher Nolan movie. I was driving from Scottsdale, where I lived, after I'd gotten released from the Cubs in 2013 to go across the country and get ended up becoming an audition for Indians Live, which was the pre and post game show for Cleveland here locally on Fox Sports. And I got about halfway to right around St. Louis. It was about a 15-hour drive that first day. It took about 30 hours to drive across country. And it was straight out of a movie where I had the lights of Busch Stadium. Cardinals were at home that night. The lights were in my rearview mirror, and the overwhelming feeling came over me that I was done. And it was the fear of the unknown, because I had never done any broadcast work. Vanderbilt did not have a quote unquote broadcast, you know, major or department. My first ever time on air was that first pregame show that I did. And fortunately, I felt like I was one of the few professional athletes that could speak in complete sentences and make things work. And, you know, it ended up coming into just a brilliant career that I would never have told you during my playing days, A, that I thought I would get into at what, age 29, 30, B, maybe even have more fun doing this job than I ever did playing in some respects, because it is a business. I mean, it really is cutthroat. It's not all glitz and glamour. Yeah, you get paid a great amount of money if you're in it for long enough. But day in and day out, it's survival of the fittest. It's not as all chalked up like this is the life, because you got to put in the work every single day. And to that end, Dave, as you well know, it's harder because there is only 2, 3, maybe 4 jobs on the broadcast side. And it's easier, quote unquote, to go make a major league team than it is to become a broadcaster of a team. There's just a finite amount of positions that are available. So some guys don't plan ahead. Some guys aren't able to pivot as quickly. I was very fortunate to have the opportunity within weeks of being released from the Cubs. And, you know, it's one of the great foundational points of my post-playing career that I still get to enjoy doing today.
In the blink of a young girl's eye, glory days. I'm with Jensen. You know how hard this can be, Mike Palm. So, we enjoy these days. I don't know what I'd do if I didn't get to talk sports every day.
Question two, Jensen. In Tuesday night's All-Star game, 27 of the 54 outs were recorded via strikeout. The very best hitters in our game couldn't put the ball in play more than 50% of the time. And there was only one home run. Is the movement toward home runs over average, the emphasis on launch angle and exit velo, push the game too far toward the three outcomes and too far from fundamentals and finesse?
Great question. And you're talking to a very biased viewer. I thought it was absolute wonderful theater to watch all of the free air conditioning that happened courtesy of the best in our game. Mike, you know that this game was built on this one true sentence: great pitching, beats great hitting. And regardless of launch angle, exit velo, however you want to do it, if you've got great pitching, you're going to go a long way. And so I think that in and of itself was a great microcosm of how deep the talent is on the pitching mound in both the American League and the National League. The emphasis on guys continuing to try and up their velocity as far as fastballs, breaking balls. I mean, we have a guy leading the Cy Young market in the National League that has the highest average fastball velocity in history. And his off-speed, we're talking Jacob Mizrowski of the Brewers here, his off-speed was my best bullet. He throws a slider at like 93, 94 miles an hour. That at one point was the hardest I could throw my fastball. And so that just gives you an idea of how the athlete has continued to grow. I think front offices continue to try and find ways to counteract it. But for one night, and we're allowed this, Dave Ross and Mike Palm, for one night, the beacon continues to be the right and left arms of God, 60 feet, 6 inches from home plate.
I think that's why I enjoy watching the Marlins play baseball so much this year, Jensen and Mike, is that because they put the ball in play, right? They try to avoid those strikeouts that Mike's alluding to. They put some pressure on the defense. It is a little bit old school baseball. Maybe the bunt's going to come back a little bit for certain teams to move runners along. I like that nuance of Major League Baseball instead of just the three outcomes that Mike's alluding to.
Dave, I don't know who likes it anymore, though. I mean, Luis Urias hits 330 every year and doesn't strike out. Nobody wants him on their team. It's amazing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, good point.
It's amazing to me. Jensen, I want to go back, question three, to last Saturday. And I thought of you as I was watching the Major League Baseball draft. Or anybody that cares about college baseball, or let's just say anybody that cares about the game of baseball. You have an all-star shortstop for the number one team in the country. And the commissioner of baseball, and it's known he's going to be the number one pick. He was minus 12. The commissioner of baseball cannot pronounce his name, meaning he has no idea. He has no idea who this player was. I'll go back even to the years you played in Major League Baseball with Bud Seeley. I don't have to go back to Bart Giamani. I could go on and on about Bart Giamani or my guy Bowie Kuhn. Let's just go back to Bud Seeley, who's a car salesman, was invested in the game of baseball because he owned a team. But now we have commissioners who can't even pronounce the name of the number one pick, or in the WNBA can't pronounce the name of the coach of the year. They're just lawyers who are labor negotiators. How dangerous is it, Jensen, when the commissioners of our major sports aren't even fans of it?
Yeah, Rock Chalowski, for people that don't know, that's how you say it. And I will not repeat how the commissioner unfortunately botched that one. And you work the whole time throughout the years, right? High school, little league, into college, and to that moment of being the number one overall selection. I can remember, you know, Roger Goodell taking a handful of days to make sure not just the first round potential picks, Mike and Dave, but also, you know, the other ones that he would be tasked with talking about in local media interviews or national interviews, what have you. It is really disconcerting, to say the least. Mike, I'm actually going to redirect to you because I think you would be on board with this. And I said this to Dave in a Lewis Ross administration. An executive order of day one would be to end the first half of the baseball season on a Saturday. And every Saturday would be a day game, depending on what time zone you're in. That would allow players to get to the All-Star City that night. And then Sunday afternoon would be the Futures game and showcasing our great young prospects, the next coming, if you will. And then Sunday night, what do? We all get in front of our TVs, right? We watch something. What a great standalone spot to have the Major League Baseball draft. You want to grow the game, Commissioner Manfred? You want to have an opportunity where the eyes of America are unencumbered by anything else. Not only do you get to the best and brightest that are on the precipice of making their Major League debuts, if they haven't already in the Futures game, you have no other games going on during that time that are of consequence, and you have the very best and brightest. They're about to hear their names called. We do it in football. We usually do it in basketball. Pretty much do it in the NHL. Not a hard thing to do, and we're right there with the CBA. Why not get that instituted where you can go Monday through Saturday? Every Saturday is a day game. To end the first half, Sunday is an off day, Futures game in the afternoon, Major League Baseball draft at night. This is the end of my TED Talk. I don't think it's going to be hard to implement.
I think, Jensen, you reached, at least you made the first step in getting it off College World Series. So I think they made the first step in the right direction here. I don't think your tweaks would take too much. A little bit of scheduling tweaks to get rid of that Sunday game, but that's not that hard. They start earlier and earlier every year, so I'm supportive.
I would say this, Brian Rolapp, the new commissioner of the PGA Tour, is an NFL guy. He is starting to get some pushback, Mike, from some old golf heads, if you will, saying, is he just doing a football model? Does he really get our sport, the one that he's the commissioner of? Very interesting question that you posed today on Palms Pressing 3. Give him a follow on X at Circa Meister. Go say hi if you're over there at Circa or the D or the Golden Gate Casino. Palms Pressing 3, always a show.